If you want to talk about music and revolution, there is one voice that stands out, Bob Dylan.
He was just very, very powerful. His voice was plain. I never thought it was raspy or harsh. I thought it was plain. But he was singing of extraordinary things. I remember the first album of his I heard was Free Will and Bob Dylan, the second album. I loved the cover. I thought the cover was fantastic. But the songs on that album, particularly A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, were like, you know, nothing I'd ever heard before. And I was kind of hooked from the start.
That's historian Sean Willance. He's just written a new book called Bob Dylan in America. Now, the thing about Dylan, as any fan will tell you, is that he has had a mercurial career. The minute you think you've got a handle on what his music is all about, it changes. So how does that translate to Dylan's politics? Willance says the birth of Dylan's music is deeply wound up in the politics of the time.
The world of the folk revival had always been attached to the left, right? I mean, it came out of the left in many ways. But when Dylan came along in 61, 62, it was very deeply intertwined with the civil rights movement. And so his songs, Blown in the Wind, Oxford Town, I mean, all of that stuff was coming out of his life, his concerns of the time. And his views on, you know, sort of racial injustice in particular have always been very, very strong. I mean, they continue up to this day.
Oxford Town, everybody's got their heads bowed down. Sun don't shine above the ground, ain't going down to Oxford Town.
His attraction not just to black music, but to black people, actually, black performers, has always been very strong. So it's not just a political statement, but he was very involved in politics until around the end of 1963, when I think he realized that, or for himself, that no political movement was going to affect the kind of change that he was, you know, singing about.
You talk about the connection between Dylan and the American composer Aaron Copland, who mined folk music for his compositions. And Dylan later on played Copland's music before his concerts. So there is a connection there between the music and the politics, too?
Very much so. I mean, he was tied up with the Popular Front, the left, in New York in the 1930s and on into the 1940s. Pete Seeger's dad reviewed one of his concerts, gave it a rave review in 1934. Pete Seeger was being dragged to hear Aaron Copland, of all people. So it came out of that same impulse, beginning in the mid-30s, to blend culture and politics in a kind of populist vein that came out in the 40s in Copland's orchestral work with things like Fanfare for the Common Man, where the title kind of tells you what it's about. And so that world, which was not that disconnected completely from Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie, the figures that we know shaped Dylan's work, was part of a force field that Dylan inherited. Now, Dylan didn't listen to Aaron Copland and then go out and write Blown in the Wind. But nevertheless, if you want to understand that broader frame of reference, I think Copland actually helps you understand it a lot.
And what Copland did, incorporating folk music, not that different from what Dylan did with the lefty folk operas Pirate Jenny and Threepenny Opera.
Well, I'm glad you see the parallel, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about the Threepenny Opera connection was that yet another one of these American composers who was around in the 30s, a man named Mark Blitzstein, whom the listeners might remember as the composer of a sort of left-wing folk opera called The Cradle Will Rock. It was Blitzstein's translation of the Threepenny Opera, which was playing off-Broadway in the late 1950s and then had a small revival when Dylan was in New York. It was that translation, especially of Pirate Jenny, that bowled Dylan over when he went to hear it.
By noontime, the dock is all swarming with men coming off of that ghostly freighter. They're moving in the shadows where no one can see, and they're chaining up people and bringing them to me, asking me, kill them now or later.
Listening to a singer named Mickey Grant sing Pirate Jenny, But it was Mark Blitzstein's words, you know. And so when you see what happened with how Dylan appropriated that, not so much the melody, but the words and the imagery, again, you're taken back to 1930s left-wing New York. So it all kind of connects.
Then they'll raise their hands, saying, we'll meet all your demands, but we'll shout from the bow, your days are numbered. And like Pharaoh's tribe, they'll be drowned in the tide, and like Goliath, they'll be conquered.
It's interesting looking at Dylan, isn't it? You've got this early period when he was in New York playing in Washington Square, playing with Dave Van Ronk and Peter Paul and Mary and hanging around with Pete Seeger. And then there is that kind of, oh, God, it's just not going to work. None of this is going to make any difference, period, when he remained a great artist but moved away from it. So a lot of people think of him as a poser, somebody who was just in politics because it was a way to get advanced. You don't see him at all that way.
I've heard that, and I can't imagine someone writing, I don't know, Blown in the Wind or Oxford Town. I can't imagine anybody doing all of that and doing it all cynically. There's no question that Bob Dylan was very ambitious. He has said in his memoir that, you know, destiny was staring at him and only at him, and he was going to follow. But, you know, I think that Dylan is the kind of artist who has gone through many different phases, all of them sincere, but all of them up for questioning. And he never settles in too comfortably into any one of them. He's got a very restless muse, and the muse leads him in very different directions. So I think that, you know, by the time we got to the end of 1963, he got to the end of 1963, after the Kennedy assassination, which I think actually had a great impact on him as it did on everyone, a great trauma, I think that he was not just dissatisfied with politics, but I think he wanted to move in a different vein artistically. He wanted to express things that he couldn't express simply talking about politics. And he wanted to do it in a language that you couldn't do within the form of conventional folk music. You could do it with a guitar and harmonicas, but you couldn't do it with that kind of language. So he moved on. But Dylan has done this throughout his career. And it's not because, you know, I mean, let's jump to the late 1970s when he starts writing his gospel music. I mean, if you were thinking of a really shrewd career move, I don't think that moving into gospel music in the late 1970s was it.
Well, especially not for Bob Dylan. You wouldn't expect him to go there at all.
That's right. But he had a genuine religious conversion. He genuinely became a Christian. And that was what, not just his muse, but his, that's where his soul was taken.
You may be a preacher, preacher, spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. And maybe somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Brings me back to this business of Dylan sort of remaking himself and reappearing in people's lives. We've talked about how passionate people have been about him and in both enjoying him and rejecting him.
Right.
And about the politics. It seems to me it's in some ways it's the same thing. You say he's political and then he isn't political and then he's political again and then he isn't political.
Right.
Well, what was the thing he tried to sing on the Ed Sullivan show?
Right. It's kind of relevant again because the John Birch Society is back in the news. He had written a song called Talkin' John Birch Blues or Talkin' John Birch Paranoid Blues, which is about the John Birch Society. There were other songs about the John Birch Society at the time making fun of it. His was more cutting, though. And he had one line in there which seemed to liken the John Birch Society to Hitler.
Now, we all agree with Hitler's views, although he killed 6 million Jews. It don't matter too much that he was a fascist. At least you can't say he was a communist. That's the same like if you got a cold or took a shot of malaria. Well, I was looking everywhere for them gall-darn reds. I got up in the morning, looked under my bed, looked in the sink behind the door, looked in the glove compartment of my car. I couldn't find them.
CBS took this as a, you know, prima facie case of libel, so they didn't want to put it on the Ed Sullivan Show. In fact, they pulled it off his record, too. It was going to be on Free Will and Bob Dylan, but Columbia Records pulled it. And Dylan was greatly outraged. I mean, he just thought this was a case of censorship. So, I mean, he gave way on all of that, but he walked off the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, he refused to appear on the show at all. And, you know, if you're of our age, you'll remember in 1963, you know, an appearance on Ed Sullivan was a career maker.
Anybody who says that Bob Dylan was only ambition just has to take a look at that.
Precisely. Exactly. He really did believe in, you know, the freedom of expression, quite apart from the politics of being able to say what he believed. And that was at the heart of what was going on in the folk revival.
Yeah. Thinking about Dylan and politics again, which is sort of where we started this conversation, do you see the Bob Dylan of 2010 as political or as powerful as the Dylan of 1964?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by politics. I mean, he's not writing political songs. He's not writing anthems to any movement. But then again, there's no movement to really to write anthems for. There was the Barack Obama political campaign, which had plenty of people doing things for it. He contributed some things to it, actually. You know, but Bob Dylan in his art has moved well beyond doing that kind of more transparent political statement. And yet, you know, when you listen to some of the recent work, there's a measure of politics in it. On a song like Summer Days, when he talks about politicians in his running shoes, I actually thought of Bill Clinton. You know, he's making clear his, not aversion to politicians at that point, but, you know, his mistrust of them.
Politicians got on his jogging shoes. He must be running for office, got no time to lose. Sucking the blood out of the genius of generosity. He been rolling your eyes, you been teasing me.
His politics laced throughout Dylan's work continues to be there. You can't have as large an imagination, I think, and be writing in such an ambitious way as Bob Dylan does without politics being there. I mean, politics is part of the world we live in, so it's going to be part of what he's trying to talk about. It's just that it's not going to be, you know, preaching to you, telling you, well, as he used to put it, finger-pointing songs, pointing out who the malefactors are, and then telling you to go out and do something or inspiring you to go out and do something. He's not going to do that. But that doesn't mean that politics aren't there.
Well, and the story's not over.
And the story is by no means over.
Historian and author Sean Willens is the author of Bob Dylan in America.